This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way.
I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and sometimes record in our closets.
Today we are talking about cacio e pepe. Did I say it right?
I think. I mean, you said it like as well or better than I do, so I think we're both doing it badly.
But I think I like separated the words much more than they would be separated in Italian.
Maybe. Cacio e pepe.
Yeah, I think that's probably it. Nailed it.
All of my like various repertoire of characters that I can do for my family all at a certain point become Italian.
Sure.
Like it's yeah.
Can you do like Jack Nicholson but Italian?
No. Well, not on purpose. He just becomes Italian. Anyway.
That's cool.
Okay. So, yeah, today we are talking about cacio e pepe, and
we should start by defining this,
right?
Let's
start by defining it. I mean, I think our listeners know what this is. This dish is very trendy / was recently very trendy. When does something stop being trendy? And does someone come along and like ring a bell and say like, here lies cacio e pepe?
Yeah, it's a very
no longer
solemn
trendy
ceremony. Yeah, and then they bury some pasta.
There's a
then it grows into a spaghetti tree.
Layer. Yep.
For sure. Yeah. Like, you know, just in the Italian tradition, there's a bagpipe player.
Yep. Anyway, so, okay. So this is a pasta dish. It is typically Roman. It has been made in Rome, in the area of Rome, actually for not as long as you might think. And we'll get to that in a second.
Oh, so but it consists maybe like of spaghetti since like 2013?
It consists of, so the pasta you use is either spaghetti or tonnarelli. Tonnarelli being a long noodle, but that is square in cross section rather than circular.
Two questions.
Yeah.
Number one, what is spaghetti? Number two, is tonnarelli different from spaghetti alla chitarra?
Oh my gosh. Okay, if you're in the Wikipedia entry for cacio e pepe and you click on tonnarelli, it takes you to the chitarra.
Oh, I feel so smart.
Okay, anyway.
No, I didn't do that. This is like right off the dome here.
Anyway, so yeah, it's one of those two long skinny noodles, and it is sauced, I'm making air quotes here, with grated pecorino romano and black pepper and a bit of pasta cooking water.
Yeah, this is like of all the Roman pastas, and we should talk about, because like I love these Roman pastas, and we should put it into context with the other ones. Like all of them kind of seem like this is like too minimal to be even considered a sauce, but it's so good.
Yes. And it was really helpful to me, actually. Well, so we should say we're going to have a guest here in a moment.
Yeah.
We are going to have Christina Gill, who is a co-author and the photographer of the book Tasting Rome.
Yeah.
She is a native of Nashville, Tennessee, but lives in Rome and has lived there for quite some time now. Anyway, I learned a lot by looking at that book because I have made, I think, three different recipes of cacio e pepe over the years, and they have been vastly different.
Interesting.
And yet they were all very, very similar. But what I learned
vastly different, but very similar.
Very similar in terms of the ingredients and you know what I mean? What I learned from Christina's book is that it is a very typical thing for cacio e pepe to vary in terms of dryness or like sauciness, depending on who's making it and how they make it.
How about in terms of, we'll get to clumpiness and how to avoid clumps.
Okay.
So should we go down memory lane?
I also want to say, just for anybody who doesn't know, cacio e pepe basically means cheese and black pepper.
Yeah, and it's a very black pepper forward dish, usually.
It is.
Right?
It is. And it's very salty, too, because pecorino romano is a hard, salty sheep's milk cheese.
Yeah, no, I had all the cheese for my recipe, like sitting in a pretty big bowl on the counter. And I was like, I am so excited that I got to put all of this cheese in.
Yeah, it's impressive, right? It's so much cheese.
Yeah.
Let's go down memory lane.
Let's do it.
You first.
I don't really have much experience with this dish. Like, you know, I've had it here and there. Like, you've made it for me and it was delicious. I don't think when I made it the other day, it was the first time, but it was maybe the second or third time. It just doesn't come to mind for some reason. I think it's because, like, in my mind, it seems too simple to be good, but of course, it's great. So my mind doesn't work great.
Just to make our listeners jealous, I should remind everyone that I made this for your birthday in 2021.
Oh, that was such a great birthday feast.
When we were on a corporate retreat together.
Yeah, so it was cacio e pepe. There was ice cream with homemade hot fudge.
Yes.
And
there was an erotic thriller.
That was the spiciest ingredient of all.
Mm-hmm.
Man,
mm-hmm.
I loved that movie.
I don't remember what it was.
It was Color of Night. It was the stupidest movie we've ever watched, and I loved every moment of it.
That was the one with the group therapy scenes, right?
Yes,
I loved that. And
just
the giant
like
baseball mitt, the giant baseball mitt chair, right? Okay. All right. But it's time for my memory lane. Okay. So I think the first time I ever heard of this pasta was in Gourmet magazine.
That makes sense.
Like around the time I moved to Seattle. So I looked it up, and the recipe was that I made for the first time was from 2003. And it was in one of those, like, I think like short order cook sections they had. Do you remember that? Like their 30 minute meals or whatever. Anyway, I made it. I loved it.
Very like begrudging, right? Like, we're Gourmet magazine, but fine.
But fine, we'll give you something easy to make. So I made it for the first time using the gourmet recipe, which I'll talk more about in a minute. And I loved it. And I blogged about it in like the first year of blogging.
Wow.
I looked it up. It was October 2005.
The first year of blogging.
And the post is horrifying. Which means everybody's now going to go look it up.
Yeah.
But I just want everybody to know that I know it's horrifying. It's just, it's really cute. Anyway,
I can't wait to read this.
So in the time, I'll talk more about other recipes I've tried, but what I make now, I make all the time. And it is the recipe from the book Repertoire by Jessica Badalana. And we make it so often in this household that for a time, June referred to it as like
noodles.
My mac and cheese.
Yeah.
Anyway, I would say I make it like at least twice a month at this point. But I was thinking when I was doing this agenda that I really have only eaten it once, maybe twice in restaurants.
Okay.
I feel like this pasta dish is so much about like a fine balance of ingredients and like the speed at which you mix them and the heat at which you mix them that I think it'd be very easy for a restaurant to butcher this stuff.
I think so, too. On the other hand, I feel like compared to making it at home, I could see a restaurant being using like absolute vast amounts of olive oil and or butter that I might hesitate to use at home. Not because I'm trying to be abstemious or anything, but just because like it feels like it might be like a wrong amount.
Well, I think most of the time the amount of oil or butter that restaurants use is an amount that home cooks would think is ludicrous.
Yeah, exactly.
And yet it's what it often takes to create the texture and flavor and all that stuff that we love. I think one place where I have actually eaten this, and I want to talk to Christina about it, is a restaurant in Rome that has been around, I think, since 1911.
Wow, it's called, that's when my grandfather was born.
Really?
Yeah.
Is this your good grandfather or your bad grandfather?
The good one.
Good. I had heard much less about him than the bad one.
You know, the bad one hung around much longer being mean.
Oh, because he was fueled by pure rage and badness. Yeah. Anyway, so the restaurant is called Trattoria Perilli. P-E-R-I-L-L-I.
Okay.
And I went there. So, Matthew, do you remember, like, when we were the kind of food writers who would get invited on press trips?
Yeah, I don't think I ever, like, the closest thing to a press trip I ever went on, I think, was to Idaho.
Pretty cool. What'd you do in Idaho?
Oh, I went to this amazing trattoria, like, it was next to a fountain. No, I went to, I was, like, hired by, like, a resort chain to write about their new resort. And I mean, it was really fun. Like, I got to stay like in a bungalow at the resort, and I got to like drive around with the chef and eat stuff.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I think the only press trip that I ever went on was like this most epic of epic press trips, which was, it was sponsored by like the Naples, Italy Chamber of Commerce.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I wound up on this press trip because of Francis Lamb, who at that time, you know, now he's what, like the editor-in-chief of Clarkson Potter or something?
And host of The Splendid
and
Table.
And host of The Splendid
he's the,
Table.
He's the anyway, toast of the town is what he is.
He is the toast of the town. Anyway, but at that time, he was just a lowly writer for Gourmet Magazine.
Well, I mean, I don't think he was like lowly.
I know, I'm teasing. I mean, we all wanted to be writers for Gourmet Magazine.
And we all wanted to be more like Lowly Worm.
No, you and Francis actually succeeded at that.
At being writer, yeah, that's true. And one of us went on to great success after that.
That's true. You did. Sorry, Francis. Anyway, but I had just met Francis, and he like knew these people who were organizing this press trip in Italy, and he put my name in the hat. So I wound up traveling to Italy with Francis and his friend, who is now my friend, Winnie Yang. We met up in Rome together before we joined up with this press trip. And like Winnie knew all of these people because we were food writers at the time who knew people. And we stayed in this apartment together in Rome, and we went to Perilli and had what Perilli is known for is its carbonara.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's one of the Roman pastas, like, I was thinking about.
It is like this super, it's like a white tablecloth place where the waiters are in bow ties.
Nice.
But it feels very, it is like not slick or fancy in any way other than like those two details.
Sure.
It feels very like neighborhood Rome. Anyway.
No, you included a link to the menu, and I was like drooling over the menu before you got here. We'll include a link in the show notes in your podcast player. But like, this is like, if you think like Roman restaurant menu, yes. it is this.
Yes. Anyway, so that I think is the only place I've ever ordered cacio e pepe in a restaurant, because especially in the U.S., I feel like it would come out looking like fettuccine Alfredo.
Yeah, I know what you mean. So if you're making this like a couple times a month and it's like part of your regular rotation, do you have like big blocks of hard cheeses in your fridge?
So I make sure that I always have enough Pecorino Romano to make this and enough Grana, and I keep them together in a Tupperware.
But how do you tell them apart? Oh, by the rind, right?
Oh, well, they also just look different.
Yeah, that's true. I guess Pecorino is like whiter, kind of,
but
right?
You know, they both keep for an eternity.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, I have really tested this. I mean, I have sometimes, like in the summertime, maybe I don't make cacio e pepe as much because it's so hot. And so I've really pushed the limits on how long I can keep a block of Pecorino. And it really is, this is a real like pantry meal if you are someone who is open to keeping nice Italian cheeses around.
Yeah. So like, can we list off the other Roman pastas? Because I want to keep like returning to them throughout the show. So there's...
Let's see.
Yeah,
so
there's carbonara, which is with like some sort of cured pork and eggs.
Usually guanciale, right?
Yeah. Okay. But
is amatriciana, is that a Roman
absolutely.
Pasta?
Okay. Amatriciana, which is cured pork and tomato.
Okay.
There's alla gricia.
Yes.
Which is cured pork. It's like amatriciana without the tomato or carbonara without the eggs, kind of.
And it has a lot of black pepper.
Yeah.
Right? Doesn't it?
Yeah. So
I can't remember.
Yeah, it does. And
I think like, there's a lot of black pepper in a lot of Roman cooking.
Yeah. So like all of these dishes are like very close family relations, I think, and can sort of like kind of edge over the line. Like you can add like, you know, a little bit of tomato to your grecia and it becomes an amatriciana. They're all so good and like so unique, though related. I don't know. And I just love this family.
And none of them is like a long simmered sauce. I mean, none of these, like, you know, whereas bolognese is probably like, at least the recipes I've tried have been like minimum 3 hours, right? None of these is like that.
No, and they're all made with dried pasta.
Oh,
right.
God, I hadn't thought about that. But
I want to ask our guest like whether these are ever seen made with fresh pasta, but it doesn't seem like it to me.
Well, you know, I think that before she joins us, I want to talk a little bit about the history of this dish.
Please.
In as much as I was able to find out about it, because I do think that the fact that it is such a good like pantry dish and that it does use dried pasta seems to me part of what made it part of the Roman canon. So basically, what this dish does is it uses ingredients that all keep for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently, this dish was very practical for shepherds who were not like, you know, who were traveling around all the time with their herds.
Okay, let's talk about shepherds, because I feel like shepherd is such a like an evocative word that like I always think of it as like a, you know, poetic or religious symbol rather than like an actual job that's probably like a very hard job, right?
Like someone who is actually herding sheep.
Yeah. So like what do you like if you're a shepherd, like are you like a farmer? Or are you someone who works for a farmer? Like where are you herding them to and from? I have a lot of questions about sheep.
I think that you're asking the wrong person.
I don't see why.
Is there something about me that says, like, ask me about shepherding?
Other than the pin you're wearing? No.
Anyway. Okay. So you figure you had these shepherds, right?
Who and they were would herding have like their a, sheep. Like a bindle full of pecorino
full
and
of
dried
pecorino
pasta.
Because pecorino is made from sheep's milk, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, of
and
course.
And it keeps for a long time. And then they would have dried pasta. And this was a meal that they could make on the go. You know, like how now we modern day Americans just eat salad out of cups while driving our giant cars.
Yeah, it's very
shepherds
similar.
Shepherds used to just eat pecorino on pasta while driving their sheep.
Okay, couple questions. When they when they would eat on the go, would they have like a campfire, or would there be a farmhouse involved, and would it be their house? Or
do you think that there was like a manger?
I think probably. I mean, the word manger comes from manger, which is French for to eat. So that's probably where they mangeaid their...
Animals eat in a manger.
I'm not sure if that's true. I was just riffing, but it probably.
Wait, I do think that we have a manger for our guinea pig. I remember, like...
have any saviors been born in it this year yet? I feel like it happens earlier every year.
Like
I go out to the manger, like, sometimes a savior is born there, like, before Halloween, and I'm like, what the hell?
Now, I do think that, like, when we were, like, you know, outfitting our guinea pig habitat, I think that that I saw things listed as hay mangers.
Oh, you saw things.
Just saw things. They appeared to me. I followed a star.
Exactly.
And I saw them. No,
so we don't know how shepherds work, is what you're saying.
We don't know how shepherds work, but we sure do know what they eat.
Yeah.
And anyway, Wikipedia has the weirdest description for how this dish is made.
Please.
Okay? Wikipedia says that the cooked pasta is, quote, poured onto the grated pecorino mixed with black pepper with a little of the hot, starchy cooking water. Doesn't that sound dry?
Well, no. To me, it sounds the opposite. Like you're taking the pasta pot and just dumping the whole thing into a bowl of cheese. And it turns into like a very weak soup.
I wonder how many people have attempted to make this recipe, like just based on the Wikipedia instructions.
I think that sounds like the premise of like a YouTube channel. Like,
it does, doesn't it?
Probably there is. Well, not necessarily Wikipedia, but like trying to make recipes based on like very limited instructions.
Okay.
I guess what I'm thinking of is like that thing you do in elementary school where you try and write a recipe for a peanut butter sandwich and then your teacher makes a fucked up peanut butter sandwich based on your instructions.
Yeah,
it's called it's the fucked up peanut butter sandwich exercise
assignment.
That's what they called it at my school. My school is pretty cool.
Yeah. Anyway, okay. So we're going to be joined in a second by our guest.
Yeah.
But I want to just give a little bit more history. She'll be here in just a second. But anyway, so again, our guest is going to be Christina Gill. And she and her co-author, Katie Parla, in their book, Tasting Rome, I learned from them that cacio e pepe is like a relative newcomer to Roman cuisine, that it first appeared in the mid-1900s. So I don't know about those shepherds. Like, I mean, were these shepherds? Like,
I don't know. I mean, we've already established that we don't know about those shepherds.
Oh, okay. Okay. I would have thought that this would have appeared, like, I don't know, maybe about like 2,000 years ago.
You know? I don't know, like, how long dried pasta has been around. Because I don't know. The dried pasta that we have now is made industrially. And, like, if you can, like, dry egg pastas, but, like, that is a different thing.
Yes.
Kind of, right? We know less about this, it seems, than almost anything else.
So, yeah, it's a relatively new pasta, despite the fact that, oh, here's Christina.
This episode is brought to you by Masterclass.
Matthew, take a minute and picture that thing that you've always wanted to learn.
All right, I'm picturing the thing.
Okay.
And you know, what if I get lost in the wilderness?
Well, okay, this is the thing?
This is the thing.
Oh, okay. Well, so picture learning it from someone who's literally the best at getting lost in the wilderness.
No.
In the world.
You don't understand, Molly. I want to get found in the wilderness.
Oh,
so,
okay.
And for that, I turn to Jessie Krebs, who is an internationally recognized expert on wilderness survival. She has a class on Masterclass, and she teaches, like, the five basic needs. And if you think number one is water, you're wrong. She teaches you how to use a knife, how to use rope, one of your most important tools in the wilderness. I don't think I'm going to get stuck in the wilderness, but if I do, I'm going to be really happy that I took this class on Masterclass.
Yeah, well, Masterclass is where you should go if you don't just want to think about learning something, but you actually want to do it with one-on-one classes with the world's best.
Yeah, if you want to learn singing from Christina Aguilera, if you want to learn shooting threes from Steph Curry, there's only one place in the world to do those things, unless you happen to know those people, which you don't.
Yeah, you don't. And every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk.
And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
That's 15% off right now at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Dunkin' Cold Coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' Cold K-Cup Pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Our guest today is Christina Gill. Christina is an Italy-based food and travel photographer and editor. She's a co-author and the photographer of the book Tasting Rome. And we are thrilled to have you on the show, Christina.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
So, Christina, I know you're originally from Nashville. How did you end up in Rome?
Ooh, well, the short story is I ended up there for work because I was in the U.S. Foreign Service.
Okay.
So when I was going out, I had three choices. One was Ottawa, one was London, and one was Rome. And the reason I chose Rome is obvious.
Right, right.
Yes.
But the technical reason was Ottawa is the second coldest post in the U.S. Foreign Service.
Wow.
But only because they closed down Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia in the winter because people just, you can't survive it. And then the first is Moscow. And so I was like, okay, I'm not about the cold. And then London, I had a puppy then, and London had the quarantine.
Okay.
And so I didn't want to quarantine my puppy. So I chose Rome.
And look at how your life has turned out as a result. I can't even imagine you not living in Rome.
Yeah, I can't, like, tasting Ottawa.
I was just going to say tasting Ottawa.
Well, okay, so we've been talking about cacio e pepe, and I'm gonna start off here with a really dumb question. And I know, you know, there are no dumb questions, yada, yada, yada. But this is a dumb question. So living in Rome, do you cook much pasta at home? Because I imagine that if I lived in Rome, cooking pasta at home would be like cooking burgers at home in the U.S. Like, you can do it. I do it. But if I want a really good burger, I go out. So do you cook pasta at home in Rome?
Yes, yes, yes. You do cook pasta at home. Depending on the region, you have pasta more as your main carb. Mm-hmm. You know, when you go to the north, they would have more rice in the Po Delta in that area, mm-hmm. or in other areas, polenta. But yes, Rome is a pasta city, and you do have pasta at home in a million different ways. Now, if you ask me, do people have cacio e pepe at home? That's generally a restaurant dish.
Oh, interesting. Oh,
interesting. Why do you think that is?
Because I think that it's not that easy to get right at home. And so if people are going to eat cacio e pepe, they're going to go to a restaurant for it. At least that's what Romans tell me. And well, ever since I learned the trick, and I have this tagged on my Instagram profile, Elizabeth Minchilli, who is also a food maven in Rome, has a trick on how to make it at home with an emulsion. Then that is life-changing. But before that life-changing trick, I would say only in the restaurant. Because I kind of think you need like three hands to do it properly.
Yes. I made it the other day, and that's exactly how it felt. Now, can you share the trick with us like now?
Yeah. So basically, you mix up the cheese and the pepper and everything, and you keep that. And then when you're ready to cook, you just add a little bit of the pasta water to that mix that you already, to that cream that you've already set aside. So when I spoke with Samin, she uses it for all different things, and you just add water at the time.
Wait a minute. You mean just a mixture of grated pecorino and pepper?
Yeah, just a second. I'm going to find the thing on my, what do you call that thing? My Instagram account. Sorry.
Your highlights. Is it in your highlights?
Yeah, it's in my highlights. If you scroll on my highlights.
Oh, I found it. Here we go, cacio e pepe.
Yeah, so if you look at that profile where she shows you what to do, then you'll see you make a little paste with some water and cheese so that it's just a paste.
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
And then when you're ready to cook, you put a blob in the pan and then you add some of the pasta cooking water and you have instant cacio e pepe because you've already done your emulsion. And you're just mixing it up in the pan.
Interesting.
Is that technique in your book, or is it something that you learned after?
No. That's afterward. Okay. I don't think we would ever have included that type of shortcut in the book because the book was more about traditional how things are prepared. Mm-hmm. But the cheat is this, and the cheat, and I'm going to say this parenthetically, that I learned and it kind of broke my heart, is that this is kind of the way restaurants do it too. Many restaurants.
Interesting. But
interesting.
But it doesn't seem like there's anything wrong with doing it that way.
No, there is absolutely nothing wrong with it. But I just, I learned that there are restaurant supply companies that give mixes to restaurants.
So,
I know.
Wait, I have a question. By mix, do you mean, is it like a already made like paste?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's like when I went to Universal Studios, it was like finding out, you know, Santa Claus doesn't exist. Finding
wait, they
out
tell the kids that at
stuff.
Universal Studios?
Yeah.
Okay, wait. I'm reaching for my phone now and I'm looking this up. So like, what is the texture of the paste?
It's just whatever what you would have with your raw ingredients before they start to have heat applied.
This is so interesting. I didn't expect to learn this at all. Yeah, because when I made it the other day, like I made it for the first time in quite a while, and I found that like we did a pod Thai episode a while ago, and like I really like made pod Thai a bunch of times, and it's a tricky dish because you have to kind of like keep everything moving and get everything to the right texture and reduce the sauce to the right amount all at the same time, and I found that like my pod Thai skills really came in handy of like moving everything around in the pan so the cheese wouldn't clump. But next time I'm just going to make a paste.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you follow that video, because Elizabeth did the video.
And we will link to this in the show notes, of course.
Okay.
And to Christina's Instagram.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, so this is like, sorry kids, no Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
No Cacio e Pepe Claus.
I mean, but it seems like this is like, sorry kids, now this delicious pasta is easier to make. So I think maybe the kids aren't going to be as disappointed. Yes.
Exactly.
Now everybody's going to, now it's really going to be sweeping the nation.
Right.
So I didn't know before looking at your book that cacio is the local Roman dialect word for Pecorino Romano.
Yeah.
For that cheese specifically. That's so interesting. But it's also, so it's made in, you know, the area of Rome, but it can also be made in other parts of Italy, right?
So the certified is called Denominazione di Origine Controllata, which I forget what that's called in English. But you have it in France.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the AOC in France, DOC in Italy.
Yeah, is in Rome and Sardinia. I think it started in Sardinia, and then you make it in Rome. Like, I have a farmer up the street from me who makes it, and he sells it to Tuscans. I wonder if it can also be made in Tuscany.
That's what I saw, too. I saw Sardinia and southern Tuscany. This is so, I mean, you know, I love all of this stuff in France and Italy of, like, you know, the way in which these products have been, like, their value has been managed through these laws and things, basically.
Yeah.
So do you like just go get your pecorino from your neighbor? I mean,
no. And interestingly enough, they're Sardinian and they moved from Sardinia to this area right outside of Rome and are sheep farmers. But no, I don't go to him. If I go to get it, I go to a cheese store, and I don't eat a lot of that cheese. I am more of a fresh cheese person.
Okay.
Oh.
I like softer cheeses. You know, I'm a brie, a triple cream cheese person. And my husband is really the aged cheese. So I will go to the fancy cheese shop to get him the aged cheeses, get him the pecorino, which, you know, the really salty kind.
This sounds like love to me.
Yeah. Yes. That's my love language with my husband. Apparently my love language with my father is just to nag him incessantly. But with my husband, it's like food.
I think that your husband is probably so grateful that that's the way it's turned out.
Yeah. Well, he probably says I nag him incessantly, too. This is my public story.
Well, welcome to Therapy Hour with Molly and Matthew. So one thing that Matthew and I have noticed in making this dish, and some of our listeners have asked us about it as well, is how messy the pot or bowl gets when you make this and how you clean it afterward. Do you have any like tips and tricks?
I am a advocate of just hot water soaks and soap and elbow grease. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Matthew, what do you think about this? Are you an advocate of the hot water soak?
I'm absolutely an advocate of the hot water soak for myself and my pasta bowl. Yeah, and then, like, I always want, like, something to scrape with so that it doesn't all stick to the sponge, but I know not everyone even uses a sponge.
What do they use?
I don't know. Like, there's a thing that will, like, go around every once in a while, like, you know, your sponge contains 100 billion bacteria, and, like, if you touch it, you will die. But,
well,
like,
get a new one.
Yeah, so get a new sponge, right?
Okay, so what I do with difficult stuff, also because I'm...
This is a safe place to talk about difficult stuff, by the way.
Okay, so I guess I should back up and say I have a cast iron skillet that I needed to deal with, and I wrote to the lodge people, and even the lodge people are saying, if you want to clean out gunk and everything, to boil hot water in it. So if you can, like, get the difficult layer of gunk off of a cast iron skillet to be able to re-season it with boiling hot water, then hot water should be able to handle this other stuff.
Totally.
I also understand that with cheese, it's like when you have a bowl that you've baked in and you put hot water in it, it's like instant mess.
Yeah.
So what I do is I actually try to scrape as much as I can off. I have a wood, you know, a wooden spoon or something, just chipping the stuff off or wiping it with a paper towel first. to get as much gunk off and then do the hot water thing. But I'm also not opposed to throwing the sponge out after it's messy.
Totally.
Like, there's some exercises, you can't get that stuck cheese off and just throw it out and start over.
You got to know when to fold them.
Yes.
And then put them in the garbage.
Yes.
So to go back to the dish itself for a second, is cacio e pepe a dish that is always made with dried pasta, or is there a fresh pasta version also?
That's a good question. And I don't know the absolute certain answer. I can say that I'm sure somewhere people have it with fresh pasta, but I've usually seen it with dried pasta. I mean, it could be with ravioli.
Sure.
You know, cacio e pepe filling, or it's used in many different ways, but generally I've seen it with dried pasta.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think of we were talking before you got here about the family of Roman pasta dishes like carbonara and alla gricia and amatriciana that all I think of as just dried pasta dishes. And you can try and fancy it up with fresh pasta, but then
exactly.
It becomes something different.
Right.
Where would you recommend eating cacio e pepe in Rome?
Oh, that's a good question. Cacio e pepe. Who had a good cacio e pepe? So Cesare al Casaletto.
Ah, that's in your book.
Yes,
the restaurant the
there.
Recipe comes from.
Yes.
Ah, okay.
Well, that's, yes, interestingly enough, that's not his recipe, because his recipe, he uses ice water in the pan. So he he doesn't use the paste. They actually make it. I just went to that restaurant with Anissa Helu in October, and she said it knocked her socks off. Was she wearing socks? It knocked her socks off. And I took some other people, also Romans, who gave it a thumbs up.
Matthew, next corporate retreat, we're going to Rome.
Yeah, I guess so.
All okay. Right.
We will link to that restaurant too. Aside from cacio e pepe, even aside from pasta, I've never been to Rome. Molly has. When I go for the first time, what are a couple things that I must eat?
Okay, so I'm completely addicted to souffle.
Okay.
So
Will you tell us what those are?
Yeah, so they're rice balls, or it's shaped like an egg, actually, that has mozzarella inside.
Yes.
And classic would have a ragu, type of a meat ragu in the rice. And then they're fried, deep fried. They're really good. And sometimes, all the times, actually I've eaten too many lately. I love to just test different ones in different places, because some places do them frozen, mm-hmm. Out of a bag. But the good thing is finding a place that makes its own. And so
that is my kind of dish.
That's the one thing I would say. The other thing I would say that you should eat is pizza al taglio. So just, you can go into pizza places where they, you just tell them how much pizza you want, and they'll cut it for you with scissors.
I've heard about this, but never tried it. Do you hold up your hands to show how much you want?
Well, yeah, that's what I did. So when I first went to Rome by myself, my first time many moons ago, 1992, that was a long time ago. That was, oh my God, 30 years ago. I'm dating myself. I was only 2 when that happened.
Yeah. so precocious.
Us too.
And I went to the pizza place around the corner from where I was staying. And you would, Italians don't really make lines. So it's just like a throng of people. And I was, the polite 2-year-old that was standing there and unsure of my Italian. I waited and waited. And by the time I asserted myself at the counter was the time that I asserted myself and no one was there. Lunch break was over, an hour had passed. And because I was ashamed of speaking Italian in front of all these people, and I get to the counter and then all I do is just raise my hands and show how much, point to the pizza and show the shape of how much I want, and then walk out ashamed that I couldn't even manage to say whatever I'd learned in Italian class.
I mean, I think if you walked out with pizza, you have nothing to be ashamed of.
Well, I walked out with all that was left after the the wolves had picked over the counter.
And you were a baby. Yes. Like, what do you want?
I was two. I could barely reach to the counter. But yeah, so the reason that I say the Pizza Taglio is to go to a place like Pizzerium by Gabriele Bonci, because you have different flavors and combinations, and so you can test out the different flavors and combinations. What else would I recommend? A good cacio e pepe, because I think that that's really one of the essentials of Italian cooking, mm-hmm. is how you can have few ingredients that make such a symphony of flavors. And
what about something involving artichokes?
I was going to say, so you have two or three. So you either have the fried artichokes, mm-hmm. which I think are really good, or you have the carciofo alla romana, which is just, they're cooked in a pan. So the artichoke dip in the book, the way that you make that artichoke dip is actually how you would make carciofi alla romana. And then the artichoke dip, then you're just mashing them up. It's cooked in a pan in oil and water, and then it's covered. And then you have in the spring, you have the pasta alla vignarola, which is also in the book, which is spring, like peas, fava beans, greens, and carciofi in it.
Wow.
But maybe try to find a time when the Roman artichokes are out. That's the early part of the year. And you get the fried artichoke.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Well, it has been such a pleasure talking with you. In closing, is there anything that you'd like to plug while you're on the show? A new project or anything you're excited about in your work?
No, I'm just trying to think of the next thing. And just generally being ballerific.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's worth plugging. And we will for sure link to your Instagram and your book.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It's been very fun talking to you.
Thank you so much for being on the show. This has been great.
Thank you. So that was so great. I had no idea about like paste.
The paste.
I'm picturing it as like a kind of dirty white creamy, like peanut butter kind of texture.
Yeah, like if you can get your hands on some of that dirty white peanut butter, you're set.
Okay.
Anyway, Christina is great. I want to have her on the show again. I'm just putting it out there.
That sounds terrific. Maybe artichoke season.
Yeah. Have we done an artichoke episode? It's not something I've ever cooked. And like,
Wait, you've never cooked an artichoke?
I've never cooked an artichoke. And I've probably eaten an artichoke less than 10 times.
Oh, wow. Oh, man. Okay.
Unless you count
canned
artichoke hearts on pizza.
Okay. Producer Abby, please flag this for us. Artichokes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So as I mentioned, I make cacio e pepe at home a couple times a month because I never order this stuff in restaurants. And I've never made it the way that Christina describes, like I've never made a paste out of the cheese and a little bit of cooking water.
No, I've but always I'm wound going up, to.
Yeah, me too. So the original recipe that I made was so fiddly, the one from Gourmet Magazine. Listeners, I do not recommend this recipe anymore. I just don't feel like it's that great.
Are you going to post a retraction on your blog?
I'm not. But here's what you do. I copied a snippet of the instructions into the agenda, okay?
From the recipe.
This is the Gourmet Magazine
one,
yeah, that I think is too fiddly. So it says, while the spaghetti is cooking, fill a large glass or ceramic bowl with hot water to warm it. Just before the pasta is ready, drain the bowl, but do not dry it. Reserve 1/2 cup of the pasta cooking water, then drain the pasta quickly in a colander. Do not shake off the excess water. Dump the pasta into the warm, barely wet bowl. Sprinkle 3/4 cup cheese and about 3 tablespoons cooking water evenly over the spaghetti and toss quickly but gently. I mean, does that sound fiddly or what?
It sounds like super fiddly.
Anyway, I feel annoyed just reading it, and I can't believe I used to make it.
Now, here's what I did. So I made the recipe that you recommended. I even have this printout that you sent me like a photo of like your like hand annotated cookbook page from Jessica Badalana's repertoire. Mm-hmm. And this recipe uses butter, which I don't know like whether this would cause consternation.
People are gonna freak out.
Lots of black
like
pepper
recipe.
And a mix of Parmigiano Reggiano and Pecorino Romano. I went out and got some nice chunks of cheese.
And this mix of Parm and Pecorino, I think, is not traditional, but I've encountered it in a lot of recipes for cacio e pepe. In particular, Melissa Clark's recipe, which is another one that I've tried, uses both cheeses.
Yeah, no, so, for me, like an all pecorino pasta dish goes a little bit over the funk line for me. So I want the balance.
I venture to guess it might be that way for a lot of American palates. I mean, it is a very salty, tangy, funky cheese.
But,
so will like, you talk a little bit about Jessica's recipe?
Yeah, in concert with the Parmigiano Reggiano, it's great. You melt the butter in a pan. I used a nonstick pan. Mm-hmm. And you kind of like sizzle the black pepper a little bit, and it's cracked black pepper. So it's like my impression is like if I had like put in 2 teaspoons of finely ground black pepper, that would have made it overpowering. That more finely ground black pepper is stronger than cracked black pepper.
I tend to use a slightly more finely ground than what I would call cracked, and I don't measure it. I just sort of do it by eye. But yeah, I love that you almost like warm the black pepper in this butter in your skillet while the pasta is cooking.
Yep.
And then you lift the pasta out of the pot with tongs.
Yes, I used my pasta spaghetti server utensil that you hate.
Perfect.
And it was perfect. Then in the recipe, she says to toss in the Parmigiano first and then finish it with the pecorino. I had already mixed the two cheeses together because I didn't read that part.
Oh, my God.
So I just put in most of the cheese into the pan and just kind of swiggled the pasta around to avoid clumping. There was still some clumping, but not too much.
And you added pasta water.
And I added pasta water, starting with a half a cup and then a little more.
Mm-hmm. And what I have found is that, so, you know, you want everything to be warm, but you don't want the cheese to get, I have found that if I have the skillet on the burner and the burner is turned on, that it makes my cheese clump a lot.
Yeah, you sent me a text like warning me to take the pan off the burner, and I did.
Okay.
And like you should, I'd like to just get texts from you periodically, just like telling me like how to stay out of trouble, because I found that really refreshing.
Oh, good. Okay, good. So anyway, what you wind up with
is... How about just like out of the blue, just text me, stop doing that, and probably it'll be apropos.
Okay. I can't wait. I'm going to try this later
okay,
today.
Okay, great.
But forget I said that.
Okay.
So it'll feel exciting and surprising.
It will, yeah.
I do feel like even though Jessica's recipe, I think, makes things much easier because of the presence of butter, which I think helps build that emulsion.
Yeah, butter definitely does have natural emulsifiers in it. That's why you can make like a beurre blanc.
Yes. And why, like, when you mount things with butter.
That's right. Yeah, send me a text and tell me to mount things.
Okay.
Remind me to mount.
Okay. Anyway, but all this to
mount
say...
Mount is a really funny word, right?
Okay. Anyway, I feel like Jessica's recipe makes things easier to succeed with. That said, I've probably made her recipe at least 20 times, if not more, and I feel like I get better at it every time. Like my emulsion gets better with less cheese clumping.
Yeah.
How was your clumping?
Pretty good. Like far from perfect, but pretty good. And like I said, like I think having made a ton of pad thai really prepared me for this, because both of them are dishes where you have to keep the noodles moving around in the pan.
Yes.
And once you kind of get that motion, it becomes automatic. And I think you're right. I'm going to make this again and it's going to be a little better next time.
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like there are like 3 things that are really important that I think about when I make this dish. One, of course, is the speed with which you're tossing the pasta and getting the whole thing to come together. The other is, as I said, the importance of having everything hot, but for me, not having the heat on underneath the pan when I'm mixing it all up. And then also, you got to have your cheese really finely grated.
Yeah.
So it melts easily. So either a microplane or like the rasp side of a box grater.
Yeah.
The side that really destroys your fingers.
Yes.
When you accidentally touch
like,
it.
I'm afraid of my grater. Like there have just been too many incidents.
Wow, Matthew. Well, I'm going to think about what text I send you later, like whether it's going to be mount something
or don't...
stop doing that or watch out for your grater.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's behind you.
Matthew, did you notice that this is a dish that like you need everyone in your house to sit down and be ready to eat the instant it's done?
Yeah, definitely.
Like, did you have that feeling?
Yeah, and they were. I think we were watching an episode of Felicity, so they were like sitting in front of the TV, ready to watch Felicity and eat pasta.
My spouse has a cute little tick that we can now joke about. But it used to be that literally every time I would finish cooking dinner and I would be like, okay, guys, dinner in 3 minutes, Ash would spontaneously decide to start cleaning the guinea pig cage.
Sure.
Like literally every time. And we even discussed this in therapy.
And I yeah, was like, I bet.
I need you to be ready to eat when I am done cooking
way.
Because like I've just put all this effort into this and like you must eat it while it's hot or else.
Have you thought about installing some of those heat lamps above your breakfast bar?
You think I have a breakfast bar? Mm-hmm. Oh,
you just seem like a breakfast bar kind of person.
I do.
I have a breakfast
what kind
bar.
Of, I guess what you have is a breakfast
like behind
bar.
The
Nobody
sink.
Ever.
Like if you put anything on it and then turn the sink on, it gets splattered with sink water, but it's a breakfast bar.
It's a sink bar.
Yeah. So anyway, put heat lamps, just put them like right over the table. So
instead of a pendant lamp or whatever you put, you know, no chandeliers.
Yeah, no
lamps.
Chandeliers in your house. No way. Not after that Phantom of the Opera incident.
No.
Okay, have we covered cacio e pepe? Oh, wait, you mentioned that it's important that the pasta has a rough surface, and I did find that to be important, that you want to get, like, it doesn't have to be, like, super fancy, like, $6 spaghetti, although that will be good. But, like, I find now, like, just, like, you go to like, the regular supermarket, and they will have, like, a store brand of imported Italian pasta that'll say, extruded through bronze dyes on it, and that's plenty good. I want to be in the commercial for this pasta. That was my audition.
Matthew, the entire time you've been talking, your audio has been cutting in and out. Mm-hmm. My internet connection must be really bad. And so, like, I heard you say little bits and snatches, and then you went, extruded through bronze dyes. And then you faded back into nothingness again.
I said bits and snatches a lot.
Oh, yes. Okay, well, yeah. So this has been our Cacio e Pepe episode, in which I feel like we learned a lot and came to no conclusive answers and probably shared a recipe that people will say is inauthentic, but it's delicious.
Yeah. And, you know, we're also going to link to Christina's book. Maybe we'll like look up how to make a paste.
Yeah.
I think I just pronounced the word paste in a really strange way.
Do you remember in like preschool art time when there would be like a plastic tub of paste?
Absolutely.
And the teacher would come along with wooden popsicle sticks and scoop some out for you and leave it like on your paper plate.
Does this still happen? Do you think
it
the same?
Like, I don't know.
And did you ever eat paste?
I never ate paste.
Yeah, me neither.
Did you eat paste?
No.
I was not the kind of kid to like just put random stuff in my mouth.
No. But then like paste, like craft paste, like if you're into crafts, is that something that you would use as an adult or is it like only for kids?
I feel like somehow it's only for kids.
Yeah,
I don't know why. You know what I miss? I miss rubber cement.
I have rubber cement because I've used it for clarinet repairs.
The smell of that stuff is...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I love it so much.
Yeah, and...
God, I love the smell of rubber cement.
I think at one point, like, me and some other, like, stupid kids set rubber cement on fire.
Oh, is it highly flammable?
I think it is, yeah.
Oh, I know what you're going to be doing later and what I'll be texting you about.
So, listeners, an important safety message from us, do set rubber cement on fire. It's cool. Nothing could go wrong.
Great. Mount it.
And my lawyer agrees. Yes, mount it. When you finish mounting something using the rubber cement, then start a conflagration.
And then stop doing that.
Okay, let's move on.
I'm running through all my texts.
Well, when you say stop doing that, you're like a verbal fire extinguisher.
I am. Mm-hmm. Okay, Matthew, can I read today's spilled mail?
Please.
Today, spilled mail comes from listener Ren, who asks, this past year, my husband and I moved into our new home and recently had our baby, Sage.
Congratulations.
Congratulations, listener Ren. Needless to say, there's been a lot of pizza and takeout Chinese food on our table. Last time we got to the fortune cookie portion of the meal, we read our fortunes and ate the cookies as usual. I then watched as my husband ate the fortune paper slip from the cookie. He says he's been doing this for years, but I just noticed. Have either of you seen or heard of this? Also, is there anything similarly surprising you've discovered about your spouses during pandemic takeout meals?
Okay, I'm going to answer the last question first. No. And I'm going to answer the question about have you seen or heard of this? Also, no. This is maybe the wildest thing we've ever heard from a listener.
This is our absolute most out there listener mail.
And yet,
in a good way.
It seems like kind of an obvious superstition when I stop to think about it.
I mean, so one thing that I was thinking about is like cupcake papers, right?
Yeah.
Like that actually gets the food stuck to it.
Yeah. Do you eat those?
So no, I don't eat those. But I can imagine, you know, winding up eating a little bit of it if you're like trying to scrape all the cupcake crumbs off with your teeth or whatever. What I find really fascinating about the fortune paper, the slip of paper, is that it's not like it has any food on it.
Oh, by the way, something important. I asked listener Ren to check with her husband whether he eats it in the belief that the fortune will only come true if you eat it. And she said yes.
Now that I'm thinking about it, I mean, it seems way more full circle to go ahead and eat it rather than like sticking it in your wallet.
It does. And like, do you think that you and I would have like more friends and be more prosperous if we had been eating fortunes all our life?
I think so.
Yeah. I wonder at what point in the meal does he? I mean, I guess like how long does it stay out of the cookie, but also out of him? Because I foresee this scenario where like she asks him, like, what was your fortune? And he's like, I don't remember. I already ate it.
No, the vibe I'm getting here is that these people eat their fortune cookie at the end of the meal.
Sure.
Like normal people do. And then he eats the slip.
Okay.
As a final, like as a nightcap.
Have you discovered anything surprising about your spouse during pandemic takeout meals that you're willing to share on a show that people listen to?
I don't think I've discovered anything interesting. One thing that I have discovered, and this kind of relates to Cacio e Pepe, is that my spouse does not mind eating food that is ordinarily eaten hot. They don't mind eating it once it's cold,
mm-hmm.
like kind of congealed and cold.
Yeah,
and,
I like hot food.
Yeah, I want hot food, and I don't want to eat something that's been sitting on the table for a while.
Yeah, same and, here. Although, like, it kind of depends. Like, there are some things that are like okay that are like made to be okay if they sit around. Like Thai curry comes to mind. Like if you
yes,
like that's fine. Like warm, and it gets better when it's like sat around for a little bit.
You know what I do? I do appreciate this fact about my spouse sometimes, though, because
it takes the pressure off you a little bit, right?
It totally takes the pressure off. And also, like, for instance, if we've gotten Thai curries and rice, and if I help myself first and they're in the middle of doing something else or whatever,
like
I don't worry about the
guinea pig cage.
I'll just leave the container of rice open. Like, I know they won't mind if the rice isn't hot anymore by the time they get to it.
Okay. That sounds good. All right. So I want to hear from other listeners. Contact at spilledmilkpodcast.com if you or anyone in your household has a food habit that you think rises to the level of weirdness of my husband eats fortune cookie fortunes. I want to hear about all of these.
Okay. Matthew, you've got our Now But Wow this week.
Okay, I'm really, really excited about this one because, like, I've discovered a new favorite author who I think has many books that probably some of which are going to be difficult to track down, but meaning I'll have to go to, like, bookfinder.com. I recently wanted to read a new mystery, and so I just went on the Seattle Public Library and said, show me some mysteries that have been published recently. I want to put a hold on one. And it recommended a mystery called Coco Van by Charlotte Carter, and it's in the three-book Nanette Hayes series by Charlotte Carter. And I thought it was a new book. It turns out, actually, it was released in 1999, but the series was recently repackaged and re-released by Penguin. And the detective, it's an amateur detective series. Nanette Hayes, she is like a wisecracking, sax-playing busker from New York City who keeps getting caught up in like various kinds of criminal trouble and has to solve a mystery. Basically, you know, someone gets murdered, only Nanette can solve the crime. And she is just a wonderful character, like, you know, beautifully imperfect and funny and believable and just like someone you want to spend several books worth of time with. The book that that I read first, Coco Van, I think is my favorite one. It's the second book in the series, but they stand alone fine and they're short. And in this one, Nanette goes to Paris to search for her missing aunt and meets and falls for a fellow busker in Paris. And in the book, like, you learn a ton about Paris, which is some, you know, place that the author clearly loves, especially a lot about like the Black American experience in Paris and like about jazz in Paris. And there's tons of food in the book and tons of sex in the book. And both are like described lovingly and like, but it never comes off as like, you know, I'm the author and I'm going to teach you about all this stuff that I know. It's just really like organic to the story. And I had a wacky experience while preparing for this Now But Wow, which is, okay. So like I had never heard of this author. She doesn't have a Wikipedia page. And so I started Googling to find out like, you know, okay, what else did she write? And I found a page that was like, you know, a complete bibliography of Charlotte Carter, who's written many books, like mostly mystery and romance. And this webpage said, and she passed away in 2013. And so I'm like, oh, that's too bad. And that's interesting. And then I started finding interviews with her from 2021. So she's very much alive. She is quite elderly at this point.
Wow.
So it was a very weird feeling of like someone that I thought was dead turned out to be alive, which I don't think I've ever really had that exact feeling before. Like maybe like some random celebrity that like, you know, didn't that person die, but like not someone I really cared about. But this was really weird. Anyway, so Coco Van by Charlotte Carter, highly recommend it.
Fantastic. Well, our producer is Abby Circatella.
Please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts, including you can now rate podcasts on Spotify. So if you listen to our show on Spotify, please give it as many stars as you feel you can comfortably dole out. 5 stars. Just give us 5 stars.
Absolutely. I think that's what Matthew's been trying to say all along. You can chat with other Spilled Milk listeners on our subreddit. It's reddit.com/r/everythingspilledmilk.
Yep. If you want to send us an email for spilled mail, contact at spilledmilkpod. You know, contact at spilledmilkpodcast.com. I made it almost through the whole episode before my mouth fell off. Because I've been eating too many fortunes.
So well. And of course, we'll link to Christina's book, Tasting Rome, and all kinds of other things, her Instagram and all that in our show notes. So go check her out. And thanks for listening to Spilled Milk.
Oh, for my closing joke today, I think I've mentioned this on the show before. You know how we always like have like very formal closing joke segment?
So formal.
This is like the dumbest, but my favorite ever fortune cookie fortune, like I always say in bed after every fortune cooking fortune, like every
so
like
original.
Everyone should. I came up with it. My favorite one ever was when I opened up fortune cookie and it said, your friends always come first.
Yes! I'm one of your friends.
Yay!
Oh, I'm Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm Matthew Amster Burton.
Matthew, you are frozen.
Oh,
hold
no.
on.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see whose problem this is. I don't know. Can you see me?
I can't hear you. Is it you or is it me? I can hear you typing.
Oh, you can still hear me, but you can't see me?
Can't see you. It says camera is disabled due to slow internet connection. Video is still recorded. Is this slow internet connection on my side or yours? Oh, you think it's me?
Yeah, my side looks really good. does it? Nah, I don't know. No, my upload is slow. No, it's okay.
How's mine now? Any different?
It's worse.
When you were frozen there, I think you were talking and I couldn't hear you. But
yeah, I definitely totally froze up for a minute. But if you can hear me now, I don't care if I can see you.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.